Ron Van Dam. He's kind of a big cheese in the talk show world, and you have to admit he is pretty Gouda. You just see what I did there? Gouda, because it's a cheese. I will see myself out. You're listening to Ron Van Dam on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Thank you so much.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. It's the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm one of the people in the title. Make yourself comfortable. This isn't going to hurt very much. That's what my dentist says to me. And then it usually does hurt when they start scaling my teeth. Oh my God, stop it. Get your hands and your tools out of my mouth. Okay. How are you? Good to be with you. Oh, boy. You're looking good today. What happened? You have an explosion of good on your face. That's nice. You're looking younger, too. See, if I compliment you, you'll like me. That's how I do things. That's how I do things down here at the ranch. Would you like some mesquite? I don't understand what that is. Is that a type of wood or the byproduct of a mosquito? What the hell's a mesquite? It sounds tasty, but I don't know what it is. Yeah, I put mesquite on everything. I don't still know what you're talking about. You go put your mosquito on your thing, so I don't know what you're talking about. When I was younger, oh my God, this is bringing up bad memories. That's why I do this show. When I was a young man, my parents, oh my God, they're so crazy. My parents decided to book a vacation at a dude ranch for the weekend. I was probably about 10 years old. Oh my God. And I'll tell you why it's a substantial story in a minute. Maybe you'll be able to make a connection to me. I hope you can't, but let's see what happens. We went to a dude ranch, and it wasn't like a hotel. It was like a cabin. Oh, my God. We stayed in a cabin. Isn't that where people get murdered? I mean, isn't in all the movies when people stay in a cabin, not all of them go home. You know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? The show usually ends up with people with blood all over them getting in the car and racing away at a high speed from the cabin with the family members that are left over. That, to me, is a cabin. So anyway, so we go to a dude ranch. They booked a cabin, and me and my brother were basically held hostage for this weekend. And they had horses in a horse corral, and other people were staying. There were probably about like 10 other families staying at this dude ranch. And I didn't know what a dude was. And to be honest with you, still not too sure. I don't, because people say to me, hey, dude, how you doing? And I go, I don't know. Where's the ranch? Are we on a dude ranch? Are there horses around here? Why are you calling me dude? I live in Massachusetts. We don't have dudes here. I don't know where you find, I guess Texas, you got some dudes. I don't know. I don't have any dudes. I never see a dude. I wouldn't know one if I saw one unless it said on their hat, dude. Other than that, I don't know what you're talking about. So it was a dude ranch. Dudes go there. And one day I'm hanging out there, and my mother says, hey, you know, the Bernfelds are here. The Bernfelds. Yeah, they were another family that my parents used to tangle with. You know, they were friends. So I guess their friends were going to the dude ranch as well. Now I figured out why we went to the dude ranch. It was a two-couple kind of thing, and the kids came along. And I was not really into horses. I don't know how to get into them, so to speak. That's just a phrase. I wasn't really fond of horses. They're okay, but they're bigger than I was at 10 years old, and, you know, that's intimidating. The Bernfeld's daughter was there too. She was the same age as me, maybe about a year or two older. She was 12, I was 10, I don't know. Anyway, we're hanging out, and I meet up with this girl, and we're standing in front of the big fence that hold the horses there at the corral at the Dude Ranch. And she's a very nice girl, attractive, very, very nice. And we're talking and stuff, and I felt rather comfortable with her. And to be honest with you, at 10 years old, you don't have a lot of girlfriends, if you have any. And I had heard about girls before. I know what they look like, but I had never really entangled with any of them before. But this girl, and I won't say her real name, let's call her Eileen. Eileen apparently was a little hot to trot at 12 years old. And here's a 10-year-old boy who's obviously innocent, not too sure about horses, and here we are at a dude ranch. And she says to me, and we start a conversation, and she's being very, very pleasant and stuff, and she starts touching my elbow and the side of my arm, which is at 10 or 12 years old, that's a sexual come on. Basically, it's, is that sexual? Come on. That's the same thing. And then she says, you want to take a little walk? And I said, sure, sure. I was getting a little interested in what was going on here. She takes me behind a barn. At 10 years old, you don't know what going behind a barn means. At her 12 years old, you pretty much know what you're doing. She takes me behind the barn, and we start talking, and then all of a sudden we kiss, because she started kissing right on the freaking lips. At 10 years old, that was novel to me, and I kind of liked it. It was my first, how can I put it? It wasn't sexual really in the sense of the full that, but it was more like my first kiss behind a barn with a girl. And I think that set me up for life. So, Eileen, I don't know if you're listening to the show, but thank you for your introduction for me into behind the barn corral dude ranch activity. And as I got older from that point on, I started to join the many ranks of young people who are excited about getting it on someday and making the... the road to the final four. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. But anyway, I hope you enjoyed that story. Unfortunately, the show is not over just yet. It will be eventually, don't worry. But right now, that wasn't the end of the show. That was what we call just a little interesting story that perhaps people in my audience can go back in time to when they were young people around the ages of 10 and 12, and how they were introduced into the world of sexual attraction. And that's what I did just there with that little story. Thank you so much. Your applause is overwhelming. Okay. Ay, 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 ay. All right. Today, I have a very interesting interview. I think you really will find it interesting. Do you remember, are you old enough, were you even born? There was a movie called The Exorcist. The Exorcist was a very scary movie. Linda Blair starred in it, and she got accolades because she was a very young actress. She was just a kid. It was very, very scary. People had nightmares from this movie forever. And this is before movies got really AI scary to the point where heads roll off and all that kind of stuff. This was like an intelligently done, very scary movie, The Exorcist. My guest was around there when around the time when that movie was being done and became influenced by the subject matter and started writing books, some of them about the supernatural, and some of them about devil possession, things like that. Do you possess a devil? I don't have one. So he started writing these books, and he's become quite popular, an amazing, amazing writer. He's going to join us today and talk about his newest book, which is reflected from a true story of a woman that was possessed through a good portion of her life and how she got through that. And it's pretty scary and bone-chilling. Does that really happen? Do people actually become possessed? Now, I'm not just talking about your wife. Ron, that is so funny that you said that. No, I'm talking about real demonic possession. That's what this book, the story is about, in a very real way, with a very incredible influence. But this actually happened. So we're going to do that. I think you'll find it fascinating. I really do. So put your seatbelt on. If you're driving, you should always have a seatbelt on, by the way. That's my little public service announcement. That makes my show incredibly viable and important. Before we do that, we have a commercial break, okay? Will you please pay attention to me?
Did you know that 4 in every 10 American adults suffer from attention deficit disorder? I'm talking to you, so if you could, yeah, great. 4 in every 10 American adults suffer from attention deficit disorder, a condition, okay, still talking to you. Can you just for a minute, literally, 60 seconds tops. Attention deficit disorder is a condition that afflicts men and women. Put the phone down, maybe? Check your messages after I'm done, could you? Because you really should listen to this. Trust me. Attention deficit disorder afflicts men and women of any age and can be... Why do you have a rubber duck? Where did that even come from? Could you please put that away? Is it so hard to give me a minute of your time to... There is nothing on the bottom of your shoe. You have no reason to be looking at that right now. None. Yes, a bird flew by the window. They do that all the time. They're birds. Now let's talk about attention deficit. Jesus Christ, did you really just turn your chair around? You're spinning in your chair. Great, and my time is up. Adult attention deficit disorder. Get some help already.
Ron Felber joins us now. He's a great guest. We've had him on before. He's an author and so many other things. And he's written another book. My God, and this one, oh my God, it's fantastic. It's called The Unwelcomed, The Curious Case of Clara Fowler. And thanks for being with us, Ron.
My pleasure, Ron. Always a pleasure.
This one is special. Where did you get the inspiration to write this particular book?
You know, it's a great little story in the sense I was a student at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. back in 1972. I was a sophomore when they were filming The Exorcist. And so Bill Blatty, William Peter Blatty, and Billy Friedkin, William Friedkin, who was the director, you know, had all the stage set up, fog machines, and, you know, police had cordoned off areas of it. But I was a writer even then, and I had published a number of short stories, and I had my first novel, the first novel I'd ever written, loaded with typos and, you know, not in the best shape, but yeah, but as best I could do at the tender age of 18. And so 18. I petitioned to try to see Blatty, but I couldn't. But I did get to see his secretary at the Keybridge Marriott across the Potomac from Georgetown. And she was kind enough to hand it over to him. He gave me a call over Thanksgiving vacation. We met. He didn't help me publish the book that I had written, the first book. It just wasn't good enough.
Right.
But he did give me the idea for this story, The Unwelcomed, based on a true case of demonic possession that happened from 1898 to 1904 in Boston and studied by some of the premier physicians and scientists of the day.
Wow. And it's one of the scariest stories I've read that you came across.
Yeah, actually, you know, some of the reviews are interesting. You know, it should be read with an open mind and all the lights on in the house. My wife read the one of the first versions and didn't sleep for three nights. So I guess you could say it's a little scary. Yeah.
It's very interesting. And in a second, we'll get into how it sparks people's thought process to read this book as well. It does a lot of things. I want to talk about first about your authorship. I don't know what the word is. you've written quite a few pieces in your time.
Yeah, you know, really, I think in a way, I'm a sort of testimony to the impact that teachers have on young kids. When I was in the sixth grade, I had a teacher. I remember her name. It was Miss Dorsey. And we had essays that we were doing, you know, like you do in the sixth grade, you know, your summer vacation, what did you do, who's your favorite hero or whatever. So I chose Willie Mays, the baseball player. And I wrote an essay, and she said, you know, she came around to my desk, I remember it vividly, and said, you know, this isn't the best essay, but it's the most unique essay. You have a perspective that's very different from other people, and I encourage you to be a writer. Wow. And that's how my writing career started, actually. You know, I started writing short stories in grammar school. My brother was a high school student, and I would hand him the stories, and he would get them published in the high school magazine. So, you know, so that's pretty much the beginning of how I started to write.
Yeah, I mean, you've written for a True Detective magazine, The Runaway, which award-winning for fiction. The Mojave Desert. To some of that was an incredible book. We talked about that last time. That was about the alien situation, and I'm not talking about Mexico either. So that was, I mean, and then some. So it's quite a bit. Lately, it seems that you've been looking at subjects that are a little bit quote unquote out of this world.
Yeah, you know. I think what happened when I wrote the Mojave Incident, which was, based on a true story of alien abduction, I really got sort of involved in the paranormal, which, you know, wasn't something I had my eye on for, you know, in the beginning. But, you know, between Mojave Incident and now The Unwelcomed, which is about demonic possession and spiritualism, the battle kind of that goes on between science and maybe the paranormal, although they're coming together. I became fascinated with situations that point to the reality of a spiritual world.
Yeah, it is fascinating because you're looking at things that we just really can't explain, to be honest with you. So so when you open up that facet of the mind, then you can go anywhere with that. And
Well, actually, there's a little dialogue from the book that actually it all comes from transcripts, you know, from this case history that came from the Harvard Medical School Library. Everybody that studied Clara Fowler, three out of the five were Harvard Medical School graduates and practitioners. But there's an argument that goes on between Richard Hogson, who's a spiritualist and part of the team studying her, and Dr. Morton Prince, who's the primary physician. And basically, Hogson pleads. He says, "Don't you see, Morton, can you not bring yourself to understand the great mystery we stand on the threshold of solving? I beg you, consider at least the possibility that here at last, in the city of Boston, 1898, is tangible evidence of transcendence. If there are demons, there must be angels, and probably a God and life everlasting. You ask, where are the doctors and clinicians? Dr. Prince, we are the doctors, we are the clinicians." And so that's really, in large measure, what the story is about. It's a frightening story, and the symptoms this woman displays, and ultimately, she was cured, but also it's kind of a test between two points of view. One about spiritualism and the reality of a spiritual world, and then a materialist who is Dr. Morton Prince, a behavioralist psychotherapist who believes that everything can be traced down to something like a chemical imbalance mm-hmm. in the brain or mm-hmm. a brain lesion, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is definitely two schools, and one of the schools is quite been around for a while. What I got out of it was a good against evil. Whenever you introduce the devil, we've already introduced God into things, but when you introduce the devil, it becomes apparent that you've got good and evil. And if you have good, then you got to have evil. And if you have evil, you got to have good. And isn't that the way society kind of is now in the minds of most people? You're evil. I'm good. And never the twain shall meet, and I'll destroy you. I mean, it's interesting how things are kind of coming around, even in the human aspect. And that's what that book brought out for me.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do believe that, and I think the doctor himself, mm-hmm. this woman, Clara Fowler, was a Radcliffe College student, who's 22, mm-hmm. and came to him with this host of incredible phenomenon. For mm-hmm. example, in this demonic state, her voice would change to this gruff bass, mm-hmm. exploding sort of voice. Her face would actually remold. Mm-hmm. She could speak in languages that she had no knowledge of, mm-hmm. Greek, Latin, tremendous strength. She had went into unbridled rages of, you know, when she saw religious articles, mm-hmm. a Bible, a rosary, mm-hmm. a priest. Yeah. And William James, the famous William James, who was introduced abnormal psychology to Harvard Medical School, was the first to lecture on the subject and teach courses on it, really studied this demonic presence and found some interesting things. It had no pain. It felt no pain mm-hmm. when she was in this state. No need for food, no need for sleep, had no illness, was not subject to illness, no fatigue, was awake 24/7. So this demonic presence knew every thought, every inkling of a desire that this woman, Clara Fowler, had. Now, from Clara Fowler's standpoint, in the original state, she wanted to be a nun. She was studying at Radcliffe, but ultimately she wanted to be a nun. And she, Prince called one the demon and one the saint. And the reason he called the first Clara Fowler, the saint, was because she had visitations from Jesus Christ and from the Virgin Mary, and was, you know, very, very religious. So this, I guess, became a perfect target for this demonic presence.
Wow. Would you categorize this book as a documentary or as a novel?
You know, I tried to write it when I first got the story, which was many years ago. I'd say this story was 50 years in the making. Mm-hmm. I tried to write it, but, you know, at 18, 19, I was just not good enough mm-hmm. to write a story that goes back to the turn of the century. You know, it's pretty easy or much easier to write a story that's set in current times mm-hmm. because you know what cars people drive, you know what, you know, the fashions are, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But go back to 1898, now you have a lot of research to do to be able to set things. And the characters, I mean, Sigmund Freud, for example, is a character. So I tried to write it as a documentary, and it became more like a textbook. And I didn't really want that because it didn't convey the terror that this story actually represented and what this woman went through. Right. So much later, which would be about 3 years ago, I said, I have all the research, I have all the letters, I have all the transcripts. Let me take another shot at this. And I wrote it in a novelistic way. So I would say it's a novel based on a true mm-hmm. story.
Okay, but it puts you there, and it's based on a true story, and so it is kind of true.
Yeah. Actually, most of the dialogue between Prince, the doctor, and Clara Fowler, his patient, almost all of it comes from transcripts.
Oh,
all I did was modernize it.
Oh, you know? Okay.
You know,
all right.
So, you know, language back in the 1900s was slightly different.
Yeah,
and it was just awkward. So I modernized it a little bit, but by and large, you know, it comes from transcripts.
Wow. All right, here's the magic question. I probably asked you this before. When's the movie coming out?
You know, I don't know. I when I write, I try to write in a visual way. I teach writing these days at Drew University in New Jersey. Uh-huh. And, you know, one of the things I tell my students is that, you know, when you're writing a book, it should be like a film in your head.
Yes.
So that the reader follows along, and there's a pace to it, and there's a momentum, a forward motion. And so I write things that are cinematic, let's say, so I'm hopeful. We'll see.
Yeah, I mean, because as you described it, it is, I was watching it in my head, so I figured why not put it on the screen.
Yeah, that's the goal.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, because this is ripe for it, to be honest with you. The Exorcist certainly did quite well.
Oh, that's for sure. I think it's still one of the all-time biggest grossing films, and I guess there were two or three sequels to it, one of which, Exorcist III, was very, very good.
Yeah, it is. Although it also tells you, make the first one, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes sequels, like Godfather, did pretty good on a sequel, but still nothing like the concept in the beginning. Anyway, it's pretty. I remember seeing The Exorcist, and it actually scared the hell out of me. And now movies are more graphic, and they don't scare me as much as that did way back then.
And you know, maybe that's the reason. Maybe it's, they are so graphic that really it leaves nothing to the imagination.
Oh, there's no question. I mean, there have been a ton of science fiction films, but 2001 Space Odyssey, nothing tops that for me. I mean, anyway. So, This is a book that everybody should read. Perhaps not with the lights off, as you say, but it is a really, really powerful piece. It's available everywhere. Has it been released?
It's available for pre-order on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and anywhere else that you want to order it. It'll be distributed in May, next month, but it's available right now for pre-order. And, you know, from my standpoint, it's important to get pre-orders because that's how many, it affects the number of books that are printed and distributed. So pre-orders are very important.
Okay. And now the question that I asked you before, and you somewhat answered it the last time we talked, are you working on anything else? It's been about a 3-year gap between the two, I would suppose.
You know, let's see. I don't want to make it too long, but I'll tell you quick version.
Go on.
So I got involved with the Mojave incident, of course, about alien abductions and whatnot.
Right.
And it turns out, and there's a chain of events that preceded all this, but I was watching a documentary on alien abduction, and this fellow came forward, a military guy, and said that he had been abducted, and actually in his knee he had a kind of implant. And so they tested it and said some radio waves were coming and it was magnetic, so they could prove that it was there beside just the x-ray. And oddly enough, I had had two surgeries on my knee, and one was quite a number of years ago, and then one was about 4 years ago, just a meniscus thing. So they took an x-ray, and after the surgery was over, the doctor came up to me and said, I want to show you something. I said, all right. And he showed me an x-ray of my knee, and below the kneecap was a sort of an arrow object about the size of the nail on your pinky, and it's metal. So he said, you have something lodged in your knee. And I tried to get it out, you know, while I was doing the surgery and fish around for it, but I couldn't get it out. So I just want to let you know you have that. I said, well, is this dangerous? Is it going to get infected? I said, well, you've had it for, you know, 15 years or something, so I don't think that it's a problem. I just thought you'd like to know. And it occurred to me, let me get retrogressed to a dream that I had a number of years. It was very, very vivid about aliens and a UFO.
Implant.
So I'm going to be retrogressed. We'll get another x-ray. And if the retrogression shows that there was something extraordinary that happened the night of my dream, I'll have it removed. I'll have a surgeon remove that, and I think the book will be called Truth.
Wow. Holy crap.
Yeah, I know. My wife says the same thing.
Yeah. But at least a good novel, no matter what it may be.
That's right. You know, we look high and low for good stories.
Yeah. Thank God. Wow. All right. Odd that would happen to you.
Well, you know, there's so many coincidences involved in that, you know, like I said, I won't get into, but just the fact that I got the story for the Mojave incident was a great coincidence.
Yeah.
Somebody that worked for me, played football in college with a fellow that was an all-league football player. didn't want to talk about it. I was in New York. They were in Los Angeles. So I made the trip, even though I didn't want to, met them. And so the Mojave incident happened. So there were just a number of coincidences. And I figured, you know, let's research this a little bit. I mean, I certainly researched other people's story. Let me research my story.
Wow. Okay, now I can't wait for the next one. Oh, my God. This is you got to stop this. Oh my God. Okay. But right now, the book is available, at least for pre-order. It's called The Unwelcomed, The Unwelcomed, The Curious Case of Clara Fowler, and it's fascinating. Is there a website that supports the information?
Yeah, actually, it's very simple. It's just ronfelber, F-E-L-B-E-R, .com.
Perfect.
Nice and easy.
Yeah, and you can also get information on the other books, and it's like going to the Ron Felber Library.
Yeah, I've got to stop this, you're right.
Try golf or something.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Get a hobby.
I'll talk to you the next time.
Ron, it's always a pleasure. You're great.
It's fun, and everybody, go to that website and get into the Ron Felber thing. Hey, it's a pleasure. We'll talk again soon. Well, that'll do it for me today. I'll be back again the next time another weekday rolls around, which could be like pretty soon. And I hope you join me then for another episode. Please like the show, follow it, whatever you're supposed to do. I have no idea what I'm talking about, but just do that. Please, thank you so much. Subscribe, go to the bathroom, brush your teeth, all those things. Until next time, I wish you peace. We'll be right back.